What podcast should I listen to next?
Welcome to What Podcast Should I Listen To Next. I'm Mark.
And I'm Steve.
All right, mate. How has your fortnight been?
It's been good, Mark. Yeah. We always start with that. Never tell the truth. Never say rubbish. But I'm just trying to think of highlights.
Okay, let's hear them.
So I played a game of tennis the other night.
Okay, cool.
Against Lawrence. It was an epic encounter.
Yeah.
I won 10-8 on a tiebreak.
Okay.
So it was amazing stuff. So I'm feeling pumped. I feel like I'm nearly ready to take you on at tennis again and try and recover from my six love drubbing the last time we played. Was it six love?
Yeah, but I haven't played in probably 9 months, so.
Yeah, no, normally it would have been worse.
Would have been worse, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So that was good. Also went camping last weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which was good fun with all my close friends. And yeah, it was really good. Really good fun. Managed to get told off both nights.
By Kerry?
No, I didn't manage to get told off the first night because I wasn't there. So that was a good way to avoid that. But Callum and Owen and Craig and everybody all got told off by the proprietors.
Yeah.
For being too loud. And then the next night we got shouted at by... He sounded like a Dutchman. Like a fellow camper. He's like, come on, guys. It's not a bar. We have children trying to sleep.
Oh, mate.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Feel good about that?
We giggled quite a lot and then went to bed sheepishly.
Yeah.
But it was good fun. It was good. Also, the hottest thing on all the kids are doing at the minute, apparently, Rubik's Cube.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever have a Rubik's Cube?
Yeah.
Could you solve it?
No, I solved it I sort of solved one for the first time a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember why, but I bought a Rubik's Cube and I think my nephew might have had one and so was interested in it and so looked up online how to solve it. And yeah. Even with the instructions, it's not that easy.
Yeah, no, really Callum's been learning it on YouTube, so he now knows how to do it.
Still not terribly easy.
No, but his son Jack is turned into a Rubik's Cube expert and solved it in 1:47.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
So I had a challenge against him.
Can you do it?
I was just randomly spinning it around until he finished.
Okay, that's cool.
Oh, did you do one of the best things that happened to me? Actually happened tonight.
Okay, let's hear it.
I had my dinner made by my children.
Oh, cool. What did they make you?
Nachos.
Nice.
Yeah, it was very nice. Also, this week I had to, as you know, coach my daughter's netball team.
Yeah.
So I was trying to design a certificate. I'm going to give each of the girls a certificate. I don't think they listen, so this won't spoil the surprise for them.
We hope they don't listen.
Certainly hope not. So I'm doing a certificate for each of them. I'm going to write on an individual kind of, you know, you did so well at this, whatever. Give them a little certificate. And I was trying to design it on my computer, and it was just rubbish. Totally rubbish. And then I thought, hang on a minute, what am I doing this for? Ella, get over here. Can you sort this out? And she'd give me like two different options of pretty cool looking certificates. Nice. So
children are coming into their own, right?
Well,
now,
I think I am. I'm out the other side. I'm hitting payback. I'm on easy street from now on. I basically have to just kick back, do nothing. Brilliant.
That sounds all right.
Yeah.
Sounds
yeah,
good.
So, what about you?
Not a lot, Steve. Not a lot. The highlight for us as a family, my daughter was interviewed on local radio, local ABC radio, about some school project thing or other.
Mm-hmm.
But it was pretty cool. So I thought, you've listened to her on the radio because we could listen back. And you think she probably got her broadcasting skills from myself? That's probably where it came from.
No, she sounded really good.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Good, Steve. Thank you. Set you up for that. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. The other exciting thing, going back to last fortnight's podcast, was you told me we got correspondence from one of my all-time favourite podcasts and podcasters, Sam Delaney.
Yes, indeed.
That was pretty exciting.
Top Flight Time Machine. He listened to our podcast and he had a correction for you, Mark.
He did, but hey, that was okay. I mean, what was the correction?
It wasn't GMTV. It was This Morning.
Yes, well, similar. But I think for Sam Delaney, who's a you know, in my eyes, certainly a pretty big deal to listen to our podcast. I was pretty impressed with that.
Yeah, I imagine he'd be listening again. He wouldn't have just listened just because we were talking about him.
No, no, there's a back catalogue there, so yeah.
No, he's a classy guy. He'd be listening. He'd be subscribing, definitely. Hi, Sam.
And going back again to last fortnight's podcast, I was watching the Dallas Cowboys a couple of nights ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about, you know, NFL last time. And, oh, it was one of those horrific injuries that you occasionally see when you're watching sport.
Yeah.
Where the Dak Prescott, the quarterback, went for a run. Yeah. Very innocuous. And pulled up. He was holding his leg and his knee was facing one way. And his ankle was at 90 degrees to what it should have been. Just
right.
Dangling.
What did they come on with him? Magic sponge?
Didn't seem to work.
Spray
though,
it.
Magic
no, it
sponge.
Work. Yeah,
but it was quite sad in a way. I mean, not sad in that this guy will never struggle for money. But in a game like that, and he's the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, he wants so much to win. Dallas Cowboys haven't won since 95.
Yeah.
That's all he's about. And I guess he might never play again. Do you know what I mean? It's possible. He probably will,
yeah.
But it'll be a couple of years maybe, won't it? You know, a year and a half.
Well,
their
season's done, isn't it? I mean, their second string quarterback's never going to...
No, but
so,
I mean,
it has on occasion been a second string come in and done a...
Nick Foles
for the
Eagles.
That's right, yeah, yeah. It's possible.
But I just even think for him, that's got to be pretty devastating.
Oh, horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. I know how he feels. I've got a sore shoulder at the minute, so... Yeah, right. That was the week that was. 2 weeks that was. What are we doing this week, Mark?
Well, so this week, Steve, we're reviewing the Ben Shapiro Show,
mm-hmm.
as we rolled last time.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what this was, but quickly found out that it was a kind of right-wing American political podcast. I was initially worried in case this was like totally nuts.
He would say conservative.
He certainly did.
Rather than right-wing.
And yeah, I'd brought that up later, but that's a good point. We talk about it now in that all the way through the podcast, right wing is never used.
No.
And as a criticism for the podcast, right out of the gate, he uses left wing an awful lot.
Yep.
As a term.
He says the left. Yeah.
And instead of the right, he will say conservative.
Yes. But so his belief would be that he's a conservative and people like the now famous Proud Boys, etc., are right wing.
Which is fair enough distinction, I guess.
Yeah, but he would place the Democratic Party...
On the left.
On the left wing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But as I say, I was worried that it could have been nuts. It was going to be really right wing. I was worried it might be like Alex Jones.
Yeah, you know? I thought it could have been a right wing, shouty, nut job.
Yeah.
You know.
9/11 was a fake. And,
anti-vaxxers.
Hillary Clinton's head of a paedophile ring based in some pizza shop somewhere.
Is she? Hang on, is this an exclusive?
Well, I'm just reporting what I've read online, Steve.
Yeah, yeah, no, but yeah. So, I mean, I think I listened to it first, and you said, "Well," with a kind of sort of trepidation in your voice. Well, what about it? is he a nut? He's like, no, he's not a nut, and he's not an idiot. He's got a law degree from Harvard Law. He's had a reason. He's youngish, isn't he?
In his 30s, yeah.
Yeah. Despite that, had a relatively long career in media, formerly of Breitbart News. Was the editor-at-large for Breitbart News, whatever that means.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Editor-at-large?
Doesn't sound good. Makes it sound like he's up to something.
Yeah, he probably was. That also worries me.
You always think of like a criminal at large, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Like if someone's at large... They're probably not doing good things, are they?
Yeah.
But that's what he was doing for a while. And then he started this Daily Wire organization with his partner.
The well-named.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. His partner is called Jeremy Boring.
Yeah.
And clearly they decided that Ben should be the one to be the main voice of it. But I was going to ask you, and is he? Because you listened to the episode where he interviews Jeremy Boring.
Yeah, it was actually really interesting.
Oh.
He's another conservative, really well-spoken guy. He's from Texas. And it was basically the episode I listened to before the one we're reviewing was about his life. And he moved to Hollywood when he was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And about his experiences of being, I guess, religious and conservative.
Northern Ireland, Hollywood?
No, the other Hollywood, the other one.
Where's that?
I think it's on the west coast of the US.
Is
somewhere
it?
There, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be as nice as Northern Ireland, Hollywood.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah.
But actually, I bet it's definitely not as nice.
No, it won't be. It won't be. No one famous has come from there because obviously, Rory.
McIlroy?
Yes. One famous person from Northern Ireland. I can't remember his surname. Rory McIlroy is from Hollywood, Northern Ireland. Put it on the map. So who's put Hollywood, where did you say? US?
Somewhere in the California?
Anyone? Can't think of anyone at the minute. Actually, no, to be fair. Ben Shapiro's from there.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. But he did tell a bit of a funny anecdote about he moved to Hollywood when he was 18. So he, obviously like anyone else who moves there when they're 18, they're trying to be an actor. He'd done a bit of acting in Texas. So he went to his first job as an extra. And it was a movie about the American Revolution. And this was before like mobile phone stuff and that. So they're in the middle of nowhere doing this movie. And it turned out that someone who had a small speaking role hadn't shown up. They couldn't find him.
Oh.
And so the director or the producer's running around looking for someone, A, who can fire like, you know, a pretend musket, knows what they're doing with a gun.
With a musket?
Yeah.
Okay. And he's from Texas.
Yeah,
so.
And exactly. Yeah. And B, they could ad-lib a prayer because this guy needed to say a prayer, but they didn't have the script for the prayer.
And he's from Texas.
And he's from Texas. So it was like, everyone's looking around. No one had a clue. And he's like, hold on.
The planets have aligned.
This is the job for me. Yeah. The one man, yes. the one man from Texas who could actually do these two things. So he kind of, that was his big break. But it didn't really go very far beyond that. He decided he wasn't really an actor.
No,
but,
okay, fair enough.
It was quite funny.
Well, go out at the top. Why not? So yeah, this is the Ben Shapiro Show, which is a daily one-hour podcast on the Daily Wire network. Ben Shapiro talks about politics, what's happening currently.
Should we talk about how he talks?
Well, I was going to say it's a one-hour show, but he does pack about an hour and a half worth of talking into it because he talks fast. He talks
very
really fast,
call.
Very, very fast, very fast. And he moves on between things. He moves between things very, very fast, but much more clearly than I'm doing right now.
That was quite a good Steve.
Yeah, I could not keep that up for an hour. No chance. But not only does he do that for an hour, you notice at the end of it, he says, oh, we'll be back here tomorrow for another hour. Or if you want to, join us later for two more hours of content. He does a two-hour radio show on top of his one-hour podcast.
Yeah, he's a machine.
He is a machine.
Because when you told me how quickly he was talking, I did say to you, hold on, I think you might have got your phone on times 1.5.
Yeah.
And you didn't. But it did remind me that Callum, our friend, you mentioned him earlier, when I did badger him enough to eventually listen to podcasts, after a week or so, he was chatting to me and he was going, look, it's great and all, but I can't understand why everyone has to be in such a rush. Why are they speaking so quickly? You know, it's not radio. Why are they doing this? He was having palpitations, couldn't sleep, that sort of thing. He was getting jittery. He was in 1.5 speed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
for a fair amount of time.
Friend of mine, Neil Shanks, hello Neil, if you're listening, he and his family, for some reason, when we started doing this, sat down to listen to our podcast. I'm sure they, the rest of the family have since dropped out, but they put it on their Amazon speaker at breakfast or something one day and had accidentally put it on 1.5. And he was like, oh, why is Steve talking in that weird, fast, high-pitched way? But the problem was we were interviewing, it was with a show where we interviewed Ashley from Studying Scarlet podcast.
Who speaks really slowly.
Yeah, she's got like a nice sort of relaxed, you know, American kind of bit of, you know, slight drawl, you would say.
Sure.
But when times 1.5 just sounds like a normal person, whenever I'm times 1.5, no, not really.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, so eventually they realized their mistake. But you would not want to put Ben Shapiro on 1.5 times. You wouldn't get any of it.
No,
you get nothing.
That's chipmunks, totally.
Yeah. So
the episode, Steve, we were reviewing, not the one I listened to initially, is called Democrats Declare Anything They Don't Like Court Packing, which is quite a specific title. So I'm not the biggest one on politics. You're more interested in politics than I am. Do you want to sort of maybe lay out what that title's about?
Yeah, I will. But firstly, I'll start with, I was quite excited that once we realized it wasn't a nut job, that we get to talk about politics, because you're just constantly editing out any of my slightly political things. Stop, yeah. Like, he's reaching for the mouse. He's marking a spot he's going to edit out. Ah, stop it. But yes, anyway, it did interest me. I'm interested in politics generally. I know a lot of people just say politics and they get immediately bored. But I think currently politics is probably at the forefront of more people's minds than it is normally, because it's more directly affecting our lives possibly now than it has.
Yeah, I mean,
in the
if
past.
I could, I only interject there in that I'd agree with that, in that I remember a time, probably mid-90s, where New Labour had come to power, and it felt to me that they were, and the conservative side of politics in the UK certainly, everyone was very centrist, yeah. And it felt that whoever won wouldn't really change people's lives very much. And I thought, well, that was great. That was a progression. That showed our society was working.
Yeah.
And since then, and maybe since 9/11, I don't know what the trigger has been, but we see Western democracies take a shift to both the right and the left massively.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's very polarized.
Massive lack of cooperation or bipartisanship in politics, mm-hmm. which is a big problem, because a sensible person, hopefully like we are, would find things to agree with in both the conservative side of politics.
Yeah.
You know, maybe like economics and things, and the more liberal side of politics, like social issues. Yeah. So who would you vote for? You know, it's a problem with the two-party system, I guess, but it just leaves me cold, the whole thing about politics. It doesn't seem to be very policy-driven. It's very personality-driven, like it's always been, but it's not a topic that I gravitate to.
No. Okay. Well, I do still find it interesting, but in some ways you kind of long for the more boring, the odd time something interesting happens instead of every day, every week, another sensational thing happening. But anyway, back to the subject at hand for Ben Shapiro. So he's talking about court packing, which is very topical, because, very briefly, Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. She was one of the Supreme Court justices. Under the rules in America, the sitting president can then nominate a replacement judge who, if they are passed by the Senate, will then join the other eight judges on the Supreme Court. So there are nine judges on the Supreme Court. There have been nine judges on the Supreme Court since 1869, one of whom is the Chief Justice and the others are Associate Justices. Incidentally, Mark, what do you think a Supreme Court Justice would be paid? It's a lifetime appointment. Hence, when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died.
So what would their yearly salary be?
Yeah, no, it's not an hourly rate, because that'd be difficult for a lifetime job.
So, but it's a lifetime job, but you can retire from the job?
You can step down, yeah. And people have stepped down through ill health. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
What would they get paid? I would say, let me guess, and I'm very good at these guesses, as anyone who listens to our quiz
would
know.
I know you like
a
guessing game, yes.
$100,000 per year.
Oh, you're shortchanging justice, Mark, there. The Chief Justice is on $255,000 US dollars a year, and Associate Justices are on $244,000.
You see, a reason I went low is because I think all public servants in this field tend to be not terribly well paid. Like, there's other perks, if you know what I mean, not necessarily the salary, like politicians and things. So obviously these guys,
justices can't really take backhanders.
No, not backhanders, but it's more like it's for esteem. You know, these guys could make more money on the private market. You
by
know,
the time they'd get there, yeah. They've made their money.
Of course they have, yeah. They? So that's haven't why I'm yeah. not giving it a high value.
Yeah, but you know, around $250,000, not bad. $250,000, job for life. I'd take it. Would you?
I don't know. I'm still holding out for the football money.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, as I say, nine justices, one has died. They need to be replaced. The controversy is that, obviously, an election is imminent. 3rd of November. Is that right? 3rd of November for the US election?
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I think it is. So the Democrats are angry because President Trump has nominated somebody and they're pushing it through the Senate. In the Senate, they have a majority. They need a simple majority to confirm the nomination. So they will get that. They will nominate and get a justice that they...
What's the controversy about then? Because surely that's what would happen. Any president will probably nominate someone who they have some political agreements with.
That's the system. Yeah, the system is.
But my understanding is maybe the controversy is more about the timing. People seem to be upset because we're about to hit an election.
Yeah, there are obviously two sides to it, and the Democrats say that this should not happen because the election is imminent. So they should wait until whoever was the victor in the election, they should nominate the justice. And
is there any precedent for that?
Yes. And this is a lot of what Ben Shapiro talks about is about this. He gives us quite a lot of background, detailed background, very, very fast. You've got to take it in quick. But there have been 29 times that a justice has been nominated in an election year. Not so many so close to the election. But what you have to bear in mind is also that the election is on November the 3rd. The results will be after that. But the sitting president is in position until mid to late January. So there's plenty of time to get this through the Senate. They have a majority in the Senate. Some of the controversy is that in 2016, President Obama nominated somebody, obviously, who was aligned with his sort of side of the political spectrum. And it was blocked by the Senate because the Republicans had a majority in the Senate. That's the system. It has to be backed by the Senate. At the minute, the Republicans have a majority in the Senate, so they will get this one through. And their nomination is Amy Cohen Barrett. What the Ben Shapiro show is largely about, he does spend the bulk of the show on this, is what is court packing. And what court packing, according to him, and to be fair, according to what I've read about it, I don't know what you found, you must have looked it up a bit as well.
Yeah.
Court packing really means changing the number of justices in order to get a majority in your favour. What it doesn't mean is putting in justices that you think that you will agree with, because that is the system. That's what everyone does.
Yeah, court packing is increasing the number of justices.
But they're trying, what Ben Shapiro claims is that they're trying to redefine court packing as nominating. They're saying, oh, the Republicans have been court packing for years because they are always nominating people who agree with Republican values. But of course, the Democrats always nominate people who agree with their values because it's a partisan system and that's how it works. So it seemed to me that he had a point. But I know you said this during the week. I'm a bit like you, a bit suggestible. So
yes,
the latest thing that I've read or listened to, I kind of go, oh, yeah, no, it makes a very good point.
Reasonable.
And then I listen to the next thing, which is the opposite, and go, well, he's got some good points there, actually, yeah.
I did try, like you, to maybe find an alternative view about court packing, and I found it very difficult to find any source that wasn't quite biased one way or the other.
Very difficult.
You know, anything that seemed slightly left-leaning was very much like, this is ridiculous, this is not court packing. The Republicans have been court packing for years. Very much what the Democrats are saying, these media sources are repeating.
Yeah, which is a point that he makes, that basically, I hate to use the term mainstream media because it's been, just that term has been sullied a little bit by conspiracy theorists and kind of nutters everywhere saying MSM. Somebody that we work with was saying to me the other day something about, you know, and that's MSM, that's what they say. And I was like, what? What's M? What? What? He's like, oh, sorry, yeah, mainstream media.
Oh,
like,
no, really?
Okay. I know you can guess who that person is. Yeah. I think it's true that there used to be a kind of an onus on the media to show both sides of an argument without editorializing.
Yeah.
Television media, certainly, anyway. Newspapers will tend to have a slant, and then there'll be some that are more neutral. But it seems to me, in America in particular, they are vehemently one side or the other.
Yeah.
And I listened to a CNN podcast in an effort to kind of get the other side of it, and it was...
You felt you couldn't trust that either.
Absolutely not. I mean, the language they were using, it wasn't neutral. It was extremely... extremely one-sided. They refer to Trump's rallies as super spreader events.
Yeah.
They just call them super spreader events. And Trump is holding another super spreader event. Yeah. You know, it's like they've dropped any pretense at neutrality.
Yeah.
And but on the other side, obviously, Fox News is crazily the other way.
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
Yeah. What did you think about you know, the points he was making about what is court packing.
After listening to it, I don't think you could disagree the fact that the Democrats are trying to change what court packing is or trying to avoid the issue. I guess the way I looked at it was, and this is what I don't quite know, that is this issue of court packing a real controversy from the right? You know, are they up in arms about the Democrats trying to do this? Or is this a sideshow? Is it a distraction? Is it a way for Trump to attack the Democrats? I don't know enough about it, but looking into it a little bit, it's kind of clear that it's just really grimy on both sides.
It is, yeah.
You know, the policies aren't front and centre for any of the parties. And as I said to you earlier, it's just really difficult to find what the reality is on this topic, which made me think it's just a battleground topic. It's not, doesn't mean anything necessarily. It's just a way to argue about something.
Nobody knows if Joe Biden, if he got in, nobody knows if he would attempt to increase the number of Supreme Court justices. And I think the suspicion is that he probably wouldn't. But he doesn't want to say, and he won't answer the question at the minute.
But I think he is there to answer zero questions. He's there to be a man who stands up and has...
Is not Trump.
Is not controversial, is not Trump. Basically, that's it.
Zero. That's his...
He is standing just for anything that Trump is not. He's not standing for anything he believes in, necessarily.
No, not overtly. And it's a tactic that lots of politicians employ. I remember when Boris Johnson was trying to get elected, I think he could hardly be pinned down for an interview anywhere.
Yeah.
Just say nothing. Yep. Just say nothing. It's a tactic that apparently works. It worked for him, certainly.
Oh, the strategy may well work for Biden. It looks like it's going to work. For Biden.
Yeah, he probably will. We'll see what happens. So, yeah, there's a lot about this, a lot of detail and stuff on court packing.
Which we've went into enough detail about, I think
we can stop there. Though some of his... one thing I did find interesting about Ben Shapiro is he talks very fast. We've mentioned that. And he really moves seamlessly into the adverts.
I've written that down myself.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant way to do it. And the advertisers must love him because it makes it difficult to skip the ads.
Oh, impossible.
Because normally the ads come on, there's a different backing music. You can just forward 30, plus 30 forward seconds, 30, plus 30, you know, and you hear it's gone. You know, yeah. Whereas with him, it's seamless. Yeah,
yeah, it is. It is seamless. Much like the underwear that he was wearing at that time. Seamless. Absolutely seamless. Perfectly comfortable. Doesn't ride up. Soft. Doesn't move against you. Like he does that. Well, we need to talk about the redefinition of the word court packing. But first, well, let's talk about underwear. You're like, what? How? Wait, oh no, this is an advert. Yeah, for I was baffled for about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
There was another advert that I did like. He's talking about a recruitment company or, you know, some sort of recruitment thing. And he's talking about a guy. Feel free to...
Mark.
Feel free to edit this out later, Mark. But he's talking about, you know, your company's going well, whatever. And there's a guy, Mark. He's good at his job. But the problem is Mark is always, always trying to get people to eat... What is it?
Texas Roadhouse.
Every night he's pushing the Texas Roadhouse. He's always talking about Texas Roadhouse, making everyone go out for Texas Roadhouse. And you know, your colleagues can't handle any more steak.
There's so many briskets you can
eat. Yeah. And it just reminded me of another guy, Mark, who's always pushing his meat onto the people that he works with.
Pardon?
What? No? That's good.
That's not good.
That's good. No, I did. I like that. I liked the advert. I thought it was quite funny.
Oh, excellent.
Also, they sell a baseball bat.
Yeah,
a Daily Wire baseball bat. It made me think, you know, surely we're at the critical mass where we can have...
Baseball bats are sort of
well, not
tipping
necessarily
point.
Baseball bats, but, you know, we're at critical mass now with our listenership that we can...
Huggy sacks?
I was going to say, what is our sport item of choice, our memorabilia sort of...
Well, after tonight's episode, Haggy Sack would be too left-wing for us, Dave.
It would be.
It's a bit too hippie.
Yeah, no, it is a bit. I was thinking more cornhole bag. That's
yes,
more.
Yes, that's it.
What podcast should I listen to next? Cornhole bag. It's bigger than all the other cornhole bags. It'll never go in the hole due to the length of the name of our podcast. But anyway.
You have to have over four bags. The title would just about fit.
What podcast should...
Like two words per...
I listen... That would work.
Yeah,
right, okay. You work on that.
Oh, well.
Get your sewing machine out.
And yeah, drop us a tweet if you do want one.
Yeah, to put an order in.
Would you say what? Around $100?
per bag or per four? Set of four for $100.
Yeah, okay.
Four. Let's go four for $100.
We'll make it as an offer.
Yeah, I mean, first
200 bags.
200, yeah. Get in quick. They will sell. So, yeah. Some interesting clips as well, which I liked.
Okay, what?
This guy, Keith Olbermann. He was fairly neutral, at least. I thought that was good.
Well, no, I've brought up the Keith Olbermann bit in my notes here because I felt that was an example of Shapiro building a straw man to take down. Mm-hmm. Because Keith Olbermann's views were so out there that it wasn't really representative of the Democratic Party, I didn't feel. I've actually written down here that Olbermann calls for supporters and enablers of the terrorist Donald Trump.
The terrorist Donald Trump. Yeah,
including United States Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett and conservative political commentator Sean Hannity to be prosecuted and removed from our society.
Removed from our society? Yeah.
So Shapiro plays this right at the start of the podcast and then sort of talks about how this is nuts and what's this all about. But I don't think it's representative. So for me, it's a straw man argument.
He says
really.
It's an extreme view, but not that far removed from the Democratic Party view, which it clearly is. It's exactly, that's the tactic. Yes. It's a good tactic. It's a clever tactic.
It is, but it's a bit disingenuous.
Of course it is. I mean, that's the whole point of these things, isn't it? You know, they've all got an agenda. He's clearly got an agenda, a conservative one. But you'd have to say he's a pretty smart guy. But you have to take a step back and think, hang on, what is he telling us? Is there's enough truth in it to make you go, yeah. But then it's manipulative. To be fair, any sort of left-leaning podcast or radio show, they wouldn't be able to find any slightly dubious quotes from Donald Trump, would they?
Nah, he's pretty watertight.
Yeah, yeah. He's never said anything, or certainly nothing in print or you know, social media that's absolutely nut job, is it? No. Or in capital letters.
But the good thing about him is that you don't have to catch him in a down moment. That's
you
know, it's right, he's right.
You just ask him to his face. Center, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Donald, are you thinking of anything crazy at the minute? Yes, I am, actually. Yeah. It's a kind of a sorry state of affairs.
So, we should skip on.
Okay.
Because we've had enough of that.
We've had enough of court packing.
Yeah, we'll go on now that he does discuss some other topics because, as well as being a sort of conservative political commentator, I guess he's a conservative cultural commentator too. Mm-hmm. So we go on to some other topics. One close to your heart, Steve, COVID-19.
Uh-huh.
We've been trying to stop you talking about COVID-19 for a while. But
yeah.
His issue was largely that anything that Trump does or says with respect to COVID is wrong according to the media.
Mm-hmm.
And his point is that, well, no one really knows what's right or wrong as far as dealing with this goes.
Yeah.
And I've got sympathy for that from that point of view to a certain extent. Trump's done a lot of wrong things. He constantly tramples over the science and the FDA when they're trying to talk about how to develop drugs and vaccines, and he's promising things that can't possibly come true.
Yeah.
But
miracle cures left, right, and center.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any consensus what's the right way to deal with this.
No, no one knows. And the thing is, I think in America, certainly the Democratic Party and Joe Biden's thing is to blame Trump for what has happened. But you just have to look around the world and it's a shambles everywhere.
Yeah.
An absolute shambles. And America's sort of in the grim tables. It's mid-table.
Yeah.
The numbers are bigger. It's a big country. No one knows what to do. It does drive me nuts that people talk about following the science. The science. I mean, there's no such thing as the science. There's science, and some scientists will say, well, we've got this study that shows this. We've got the study that shows something else. And as anyone who's ever looked at a scientific paper knows, the last paragraph always includes more studies are needed.
Yep.
There's never a definitive thing, especially not for something that is
ongoing.
Just new this year, ongoing, poorly understood, better understood than it was. You know, there have been untruths on all sides in this debate. And Trump has swayed back and forward on it quite a bit.
But I do feel it's easy to blame personalities, blame Johnson in the UK, blame Trump in America. when in reality, what's the right answer? What you know, should we be shutting down 100% and ruining the economy? Should we be leaving it open and you know, dealing with it? We won't know. We really won't know for maybe 4 or 5 years as to what the right response was for this. You know,
quote that comes to mind is Ben Shapiro says quite accurately, I think. Turns out, science is very good at looking at the past. It's not very good at looking at the present or predicting the future. It is very good at retrospective studies.
The problem with that, Stephen, the problem with talking like that is that then you get into the waters of climate deniers and, you know, looking forward.
Climate deniers? People who deny there's a climate?
Yeah, climate change deniers. Okay. And looking forward as into global warming and what it will do in the next 50 years. So we don't want to be saying that science cannot predict things.
It's not worthless. No, it's not worthless, but...
But certainly in a field like that, it's probably very, very accurate compared to a field like COVID-19.
Yeah, well, exactly, because climate change has got a long past to look at. There's a lot of data to look at for many, many years. COVID-19 has got, 9 months? 10 months? Whatever? Yeah, so...
Just you can't generally say that science isn't good at predicting the future. It can be very good at predicting the future. Maybe not in this case.
Only if it has got a lengthy data set to go on. So if you've got a study that runs for 30 years, you can be reasonably confident you could predict the next few years. If you've got a study that runs for 6 months, you know, it'll give you an idea. It's not worthless, but it's not reliable.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Cool.
So, yeah, and then he talks a bit about a few more social things. You'd be relieved that that's all I'm going to say on COVID-19.
Did we get away with that?
Maybe. Okay. I was really well behaved, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. 1619 project from the New York Times. He talks about that. Was that something you'd heard of?
It wasn't. I had to look it up. If you don't know what that is, the 1619 project, which basically highlights the date of the first African slaves arriving in America. Mm-hmm. And it's a New York Times project, pretty much. And they're comparing this to the date 1776, which is the Declaration of Independence. And the point is that I guess the New York Times...
What date, 1776?
Is it the 4th of the 7th?
Oh, very good. 7-4, actually. 7-4. Because it's American Day. American
Day. 7-4. 7-4.
7-4.
Okay, 7-4. Basically, I guess that this is controversial in America because it seems like New York Times are trying to play down the Declaration of Independence and talk about America in a more negative tone when we talk about slavery. And I think that, you know, obviously Shapiro isn't very happy with this, and I'm sure a lot of people aren't. I actually do feel that the talking about the date 1619, the date when slaves arrived in America, it is very relevant to the formation of the United States. I think it's an important date that should be taught to all American children as well.
It's a very, very significant date.
Very significant. But it shouldn't diminish the Declaration of Independence, which is a massive thing, not just in America, but throughout the world.
Yeah, throwing off the shackles of rule from afar to declare independence.
Yep.
So, you know, it is the birth of the nation. Having said that, that date, 1619, is a very significant date in the history of America, amongst many other significant dates, like the, you know, the landing at Cape Cod, etc. But yeah, I think the issue is, as it is with a lot of these things, is overreach, you know?
Yeah,
if the New York Times magazine had said, this should be in the public consciousness, this is a very significant date, along with, say, the emancipation of slaves, that, you know, that Juneteenth date.
Yeah.
It's as significant as that. And it needs to be in the public consciousness, but to try and usurp the Declaration of Independence as the birth of the modern the American nation was a mistake. It's overreach. Anyway, that was hilarious.
Oh, Christ. Hold on, I'm going to turn the page again.
So, Mark, what else you got for me? Give me some more funnies before the quiz. I'm not forgetting the quiz.
Oh, no, let's just get to the quiz, for God's sake. This needs to be finished.
You got like 17 pages of notes there.
They're all gone.
Oh, right, they're all gone. Okay. Right, so the quiz. I know you like a quiz. This week's quiz is a news quiz. News quiz. What, you love the news. You're all about the news. Right, okay. Closer to home. We're going to start close to home, and then we're going to branch out across the world.
Okay. His home Australia?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's bad for me, but keep going.
It's not home Northern Ireland. Like the first 10 questions are on places around Ballymena. Stuff that's happened. See that butcher's down the road from you? Right. What was on offer this week? That's not news, Mark.
That wasn't a Ballymena accent, by the way.
I don't have a Ballymena accent.
That was far too fast. You have to get on to 0.5.
That butcher, hey, down the road, hey, that more like a Ballymena accent, hey?
It was closer.
It's getting there.
It was closer.
Right, anyway, I'll do the whole quiz in a slightly posh Belfast accent.
Slightly posh? That's not
a
guy.
Little bit, yeah. Right, okay, corals. In GBR, I've written here, which I presume is Great Barrier Reef, not Great Britain, have reduced by what percentage since 1995? In the news this week, Mark.
In the news. They've reduced
by what percentage since 1995? I can give you three.
So they've reduced in, like, as they've disappeared by percentage. Completely?
What percent? They died. You know, they haven't disappeared.
Bleached or?
Yeah, like dead.
All right, okay.
Lost all their colours.
All right.
Like, you'd be snorkeling. And you'd be like, well, I'm not taking a photo of that.
All right. Okay, give us the...
Is it 70%? Is it 50%? Or is it 30%?
Oh, it's all pretty depressing, isn't it? I'm going to say 30. Hopefully it's bloody 30.
It's 50%. Half of it.
Shit.
Yeah. Well, luckily, though, there's no tourists at the minute, so hopefully it'll be all right. Because, actually, I was up there the other week and I did kick quite a few bits. Sorry about that. Those flippers are longer than you think. You're like, oh, I've got loads of space here, loads of space. Or you try and go over
crunch,
and go over a bit. You're like, well, it looks a wee bit shallow. I'm pretty sure I'm going to make it. Oh, crap. Yeah, so I think that's where it's all gone. Sorry.
Nice.
Anyway, Rafael Nadal made history.
I hate Nadal.
What? Nobody hates Nadal. He's a nice guy. He's
pulling his shorts up all the time.
He needs Tommy John underwear. Ask Ben Shapiro. Tommy John underwear. Moves with you, not against you.
Or a belt. What about a belt, Rafa?
How many tennis players are wearing a belt?
That would be a new thing.
Okay. That's not... Right, okay. So Rafael Nadal made history by winning the French Open for the 13th time this year. How many Grand Slams does he now have, putting him equal with Roger Federer?
Oh, good question, Steve. Good question.
Thanks. That's the first time you've ever said that. I've asked you, I think, roughly 5,000 questions.
13 French Opens, and he's really not that great at the others, but he's obviously good at the others. I will say... God, it's going to be wrong. It's so badly wrong.
It's always wrong.
19.
So wrong.
Was it?
20.
Oh!
Dear, 20. I'm pretty sure he's going to overtake Federer.
That's a fair percentage in the French Open for him, isn't it?
13, amazing.
How bad is it the others? Awful.
Oh, well, you're glass half empty, really, aren't you? More than that.
Yeah.
Which upcoming Disney movie will be going straight to Disney Plus? Is it Black Widow, Avatar 2? Or Soul. Soul as in S-O-U-L, not the sole of your foot.
Soul.
Yes, what's it about?
I don't know.
It's good effort, Mark. But
it's the only one I've heard of.
I think it's about a singer who's dead and trying to get back to
I just saw it on
reality.
Website.
Have you heard of it? I hadn't heard of it. Okay. Oh, good on you. So, all right, you got one right. Very good.
Yeah, but 19 versus 20, I'll get taking that.
Yeah. Apple this week announced the launch of its new iPhone. What iPhone is it?
12.
Very good, Mark. You getting one? You got your order in?
Obvs.
It's a 5G handpiece. You getting the 5G? Are you worried about that ruining your brain?
No, I'm not an idiot.
The 5G super fast isn't available in Australia, Mark.
I know, that's why I'm feeling quite...
Due to popular demand. Yeah. We don't want 5G here. No. They'll vaccinate you through it. Right. Which Australian state premier has been under fire this week due to revelations in the corruption hearings? Independent Commission Against Corruption hearings. And normally I would give you a multiple choice, because who the hell would know the names of the state premiers in Australia? But this year, we know them all.
State premier? Because I knew that...
Under fire.
The Liberal Deb Frecklington...
You get no points for working out.
Deb Frecklington in Queensland's in trouble.
She is not a state premier.
I know she's not.
She's the opposition.
That's what I'm trying to think. Oh...
It's all over the news.
It's not Palace yet.
All over the news this week. No?
Nah, go ahead. I don't know.
Gladys Berkajilian.
Nah, I've no idea.
She has had to admit to having had a close personal relationship with a disgraced MP who was running a visas for cash scheme with Chinese people.
There you go.
So there you go. All over the corruption. Okay, which, on a lighter note, which actress missed out on the Julia Roberts role in Notting Hill? Which Australian actress, I should say? Was it Kate Blanchett, Nicole Kidman, or Rebel Wilson? One of those I put in myself.
I'm just trying to think when that was, how long ago it was.
When was Pitch Perfect?
Nicole Kidman or Kate Blanchett? I'll go Kate Blanchett.
I would have also gone Kate Blanchett. But Nicole Kidman. And she said she tried for it. Julia Roberts got it. But she accepts now that at that time she didn't have the profile or indeed the talent to get that role. So at least she's got 50% of that now. So that's good.
What do you know about acting?
I'm just saying she's not that high profile.
Okay.
What do you
nothing. Oh.
Which famous rock guitarist died this week? Or actually, it might have been last week. I think it was last week.
Jeez, I don't know.
Famous rock guitarist. One of the most famous rock guitarists.
Am I going to be embarrassed when I...
Possibly.
Oh.
Known for tapping technique.
Oh, this is boring. Just tell me.
Known for doing the solo on Michael Jackson's Beat It. That's like...
Don't know.
Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, yeah, I did hear that. Oh, yeah.
Well, disgraceful. What was the nickname given to Barack Obama's limousine? Was it Arrow, Eagle, Beast, Obamobile?
What... Why?
Well, we're just moving on to presidential debate stuff. Presidential stuff.
Obamabile.
No. The Beast. Famously, the Beast has moved everywhere with him.
Famously?
Famously. Famously. Okay. Last one.
Garbage.
One more president. Funny enough, you liked it when you were getting one of these questions, or two of these questions, right? Okay. What is the call sign given to a Marine Corps aircraft carrying the president, such as the helicopter that carried the president to Walter Reed Hospital when he was infected with the deadly virus and then he got out 2 days later? Do you want a multiple choice?
Yeah.
Air Force 2, Air Force 3, Air Force... No, I'm joking. Air Force 2, Navy 2, Veep 1, Marine 2.
Oh, this is... What am I trying to guess?
The call sign.
For?
POTUS. POTUS is airborne. He's in.
So Air Force One is his aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And so what am I...
A Marine
Corps... Is it a helicopter?
A Marine Corps aircraft.
It's a Marine Corps aircraft. Okay. What are the options again?
I mean, I don't know if the Marine Corps have hot air balloons. I'm assuming they're all helicopters.
Okay, helicopters. Okay.
What else?
Air Force
Rocket,
Two.
Rocket pack?
Air Force 2.
Marine 2.
Okay.
Good effort, Mark. Well done.
You've made it as entertaining as usual. Thanks, Steve.
So that's the quiz over. What else have we got to do? Oh, well, do you know what we've got to do?
Go ahead.
Well, I know two things we've got to do. We've got to do the random picking wheel.
Yeah.
Okay. And we've also got to talk about what's coming up next.
Well, what's coming up next? We were fortunate enough to organising an interview with one of our favourite podcasters, Chamilla from Listen to the Film podcast. Excellent podcast.
Brilliant.
Really excellent guy.
We reviewed it
a couple of podcasts ago.
Yep.
We really would advise you listening to it. Really, really well done. So we're going to have a chat to Chamilla now and we'll see you after that. Okay, guys. Well, we're lucky enough today to have a special guest on the show. We've got Chamilla from Listen to the Film podcast. It's a podcast that we reviewed a few weeks ago on our sort of mini review show of music. And hey, how are you going, Chamilla?
I'm good, thanks, guys. Yeah, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, we're all good. Yeah,
both good.
And actually, that was maybe good. Where we'd like to start, because I believe you're down in Melbourne, is that right?
Yeah, we're down in Melbourne and we're locked in at the moment. But yeah, we're down in Melbourne and we're planning the move up to Queensland next year, actually.
Oh, really? Well, that's where we are at the moment.
I have a feeling that you might not be the only person from Melbourne moving up to Queensland next year.
I think you're right, yep.
So, yeah, tell us, obviously different people in different parts of the world listen to us and we're all having different experiences of this very strange year. So how's it been for you this second lockdown you're experiencing in Melbourne?
Well, look, it's kind of a mixed bag. Because I used to do working from home anyway, but I had a lot of travel. So I was traveling around to different parts of Australia. And now being locked in, you know, permanently, I guess, till we get these numbers down, it's tough. Look, it's tough. It does a number on the, you know, the mental health side of things,
yeah,
I guess.
Sure.
Because, you know, it's just all computer screens and it's the four walls that you're in and you know, that hour that we get every day, it's precious.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, just getting out. But, you know, it's all for a good cause. It's all to get these numbers down. And I think the numbers today were 14. So
I saw
it's
that.
Working.
It's going the right direction. And soon,
100%,
you'll be out and about again soon. And I'm sure you'll enjoy it whenever you do get out and about.
Oh, 100%. Again. Yeah. And I think that it's all worth it at the end of the day, isn't it? As long as we get those numbers down and get back to normal.
I think that's what we all want. We'd all like to probably put 2020 behind us and get on with normal life. But we'll get there. We'll get there,
Although, exactly. Chamilla, it has, I guess, given you quite a bit of time to concentrate on your podcast.
So do you know what? That was kind of the genesis for me wanting to do the podcast. I've always, you know, loved films and the soundtracks that go along with them. But really what I wanted was a differentiation between the workday and you know, the rest of my day. And really, you know, I was speaking to my wife and she was like, why don't you do a blog or something? And I was like, yeah, I could do the blog. And then I was thinking, oh, what if I try this podcast idea? So I approached a friend who, you know, I was like, he's not really into films. And I thought a cool idea would be asking him to watch a film that I had seen many times and getting him to see the same film and kind of building on that. But I don't think he was too keen on the idea. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do it myself. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, doing a film review podcast.
There's a few out there.
Exactly. Yeah. I just didn't feel it was unique enough or me enough. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to do the film music. But then I was like, do I do beat for beat or do I just do a sort of synthesis of the film? And I came up with the synthesis of the film idea.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the thing that both of us really liked. It is a really different take on it's a music podcast. It's also a movie podcast. And it is unique, I think, and really interesting.
Yeah, we think that you go into just the right amount of depth about the music, about how it intertwines with the movie. We were both worried that this could be too deep for us. Neither of us are, you know, especially musically inclined or intelligent. Yeah. And so, have you got a musical background, Chamilla?
Only in the sense that I just noodle around on guitars a little bit, and I guess I listen to music like everyone. And I think when it came to films, you know, I've got a deep appreciation for films, and I don't have a huge understanding of the music theory behind some of the scores, but I want to try and capture the feeling rather than, you know, whether it's a C sharp or a, you know, or what chord they're using there. I just want to try and capture what are they trying to show, because there's a deliberate feel that they're trying to get, right, with every scene and with every piece of music that's attached to that scene. So yeah. I guess if I can try and convey that, then that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you do with it. And how long do you spend, you know, listening to, are you watching the film and rewatching bits of it again and again to try and, you know, get something
from the soundtrack? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so all the films that I choose are sort of films that I love, right?
Yeah.
They're films that I've seen many, many times, but the preparation that goes into an episode, so I'll watch the film at the start of the week and I'll just watch it as a viewer. And then I'll listen to the full soundtrack. So from zero to whenever it finishes, the whole thing. And then I watch the film and I write notes. And then that I sort of pause it, write the notes, and then go back to the soundtrack, see where it fits in. And then along that journey, I get the script. And the script is usually a lot longer than, you know, the 14, 15 minutes I try and condense it down to. And you know, sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's harder. Like for a film, for example, like I found that doing The Dark Knight was very difficult. And I'll tell you why. There's so much going on in that film.
Yeah.
There's like 100 different things going on in the film. And, you know, like, what do I include to try? And there's so many different tonal shifts with the soundtrack. You know, Zimmer uses that one theme, but he really changes the theme, you know, to try and show the inflection of the scene. But, you know, what do I try and show? Do I talk about this? Do I talk about that? So that was a really tricky one. So I had to watch that twice over fully just to try and get what's he trying to do here? What's he trying to show? There are other films that are a lot easier, like Little Miss Sunshine. The theme of the film was really about family. And if I can find that theme early on and then find how the music relates to that theme, you know, from a single storyline point of view, I found that a lot easier to do than something that's got like 12 different things going on at once. You know what I mean?
Well, I watched The Dark Knight again after listening to your podcast.
Oh, did you?
Because it made me just think, I love that film. I haven't seen it for a long time. And I watched it again.
Yeah.
And really, really enjoyed it again. But coincidentally, I was listening to another podcast and they mentioned The Dark Knight and they mentioned how it was quite a disjointed film. You know, it felt like the scenes, you know, we're kind of disjointed and it was differently done. So the music had to go along with that and have that same
feel about it. And Nolan doesn't do anything in a straight line, right? He takes about 15 different approaches to put a film together. And
have you seen Tenet yet?
You know what, I really want to see it, but we're locked
in. I'm guessing you haven't been to the cinema. Yeah, sorry, silly question.
No, I'm dying.
I'm just rubbing it in. I've seen it 5 times.
Yeah. Have you?
No, I haven't seen it yet, but a colleague actually went to see it the other week and he said he's definitely going to have to go and watch that again because he thought, I really enjoyed that, but I don't know what just happened.
You know, Nolan he's such an interesting filmmaker, isn't he? Even something like Dunkirk, where he's got the three different, three different timelines.
Yes.
And it all coming together. It's so fascinating, but it's certainly something that you have to be paying attention to, right?
Definitely. He's got a different sense of time to I think most humans, but it does make it interesting. So is that one of your first things on your list? Trip to the cinema when it reopens?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And there's a big IMAX cinema down here which is like in the top 5 biggest IMAXs, you know, and he shot on 70mm. So to be able to see it in IMAX, can't wait.
Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be good. So what have you got? Can you tell us what you've got lined up? Anything else? Can you give us any hints of what you've got coming up?
Yeah, look, so I've got Avatar coming up. You know, the late, great James Horner, you know, he's done some great, great soundtracks, great scores. You know, he did Titanic and then Avatar was one of his, you know, by his own admission, it was actually one of the hardest scores to do because he wanted to give the feeling of Pandora, you know, to a different culture that we'd never sort of seen before. So he actually consulted an ethnomusicologist to try and come up with this score. And it's quite fascinating because James Cameron came up with a language for the indigenous people of Pandora, the Na'vi. And part of that translates the score as well. They just created this whole different type of feel to it. And I think it really works well. And, you know, people say it's a very simple storyline. It is, but I think that it's simple and it gets to the point of what it's trying to say. And I think the score does that too. So I've got that on the thing, and I want to try and do a documentary. So there's a few docos I love, but one of them, I don't know if you guys have seen it, it's called Senna. It's about Ayrton Senna, the Formula One driver from Brazil.
I haven't seen that one, no, but
it was excellent.
I've heard it's very, very good.
Yeah, it's such a good documentary, and the score is, it's just sublime the way it, you know, they really, there's this theme called the God theme in the Senna soundtrack, and just throughout the whole film, they do variations of this God theme, and I won't spoil it for you, but it's such a brilliant documentary. So I thought I'd tackle that. That's a bit of a challenge, and then I want to do. I'll end the season off with Gladiator. So I started off with Nolan, and I'll end off with Ridley Scott. Both Hans Zimmer scores, so.
Yeah,
and then the others, a few surprises in there. So yeah, I want to do 10 per season. Yeah.
Oh right, so 10 per season. Good.
It's
plan.
Good to have a structure. We have no structure.
No, we just kind of went. Okay, let's start. And what do we do now? Yeah.
So we have to say as well.
That's good though.
Yeah, well, I don't know, man. we do need some structure.
Okay.
But we were talking before we came on that, like, again, we love your podcast. We think it's excellently done, professionally done. And more people should know about it, which is, I guess, where we come in. We're trying to big up some more indie podcasts. So I'm just wondering how your experience has been thus far of getting the word out about your podcast, and has the podcast community on Twitter and things been beneficial for that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, when I first put the podcast out, it was kind of just the family friends appreciation group, and then once I got onto Twitter and I started sort of getting into these film Twitter circles and just these retweet groups and things like that, just through word of mouth, people really grasped onto the idea of the podcast, and they found it an easy listen, and I've got some great feedback from it, and ways to improve it, and it's been really positive. So I think that the community has really driven the success of the podcast, and it's just getting better and better and bigger and bigger. And I think that, things like social media, some more than others, certainly Twitter's been very helpful. Yeah, it's really helped to grow the podcast.
Yeah, well, I think I said to you when we were communicating through Twitter, several people on Twitter suggested yours when we said we were going to put out a music-related review show. And so you've definitely made a mark, I think, pretty quickly.
Yeah, very much so.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing to hear.
Yeah, it's good.
How did you guys get into this game?
Oh, well, that's entirely Mark's fault. he just came up with the idea after a few beers one night.
Yeah,
And he knows very well that I'm very suggestible. So all you've got to do is say, "Do you want to do this?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." Next thing you know, we've bought a lot of equipment, and we're doing a podcast. But it's been good fun.
Wow.
It's been really enjoyable to do. I was going to ask you one other question about music soundtracks. Just would you steer away from doing a movie which has a popular song soundtrack? Because I think I mentioned on our show an example of one like the Beach, which I think was Pete Tong put together. Which I find
with All Saints, isn't it? All Saints, Pure Shores.
That's on there. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Or Trainspotting as another example where the soundtrack is.
Popular great
music,
soundtrack.
But very different to a score. Would you tackle something like that? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that sometimes those sort of soundtracks, I don't want to say it's more fun, but it's a bit more relatable. Sometimes the orchestral scores, it's relatable, but it's not something that people are talking about the next day a lot in terms of the casual fans. But I mm-hmm. think that a score, like if you take a film like Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah. that film, the soundtrack is almost as popular as the film itself, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's yeah. like, oh, what a great soundtrack. I need to get that soundtrack. Yeah. A film, another great one is Remember the Titans. It has some great classic songs on there. Yeah. So absolutely I would. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, look, we don't want to take up any more of your time. We'd really appreciate you coming on and chatting to us more about your podcast. As I say, we're loving
absolutely.
It. Lots of people
absolutely.
Are loving it, and I'm sure they'll be really interested to hear a little bit more about you and the process. So thanks a lot for sharing.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you guys. I appreciate it. And look, I thank you to you guys for putting the word out, and you know, your show is great because with so many podcasts out there, we need a show to review and to tell us which ones to listen to. So it's exactly what people were wanting. So I'm going to definitely spread the word about you guys as well.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Cheers, man.
Appreciate it. Well, thanks once again to Camilla for doing that for us. And I hope you all enjoyed that. The last thing we've got to do is we are doing Indie Podcasts next week. So we've got the random picking wheel up on my phone, which is not an iPhone 12. Many, many iterations before that. I'm going to press go. Do you want to do a sound effect, Mark? Or are you?
No.
Okay. It's random.
Okay.
We get to pick
them.
What
does that mean?
We pick them. Whatever.
What do you mean we pick them?
We just randomly pick them.
We pick an indie podcast or any podcast we want? Or
an indie podcast, right? You know how when we did sports, right? You didn't do sports.
I did do sports.
It'd be like that. It'd be like that. Except for this time you're allowed to do it. Yeah.
Why did I put that?
So maybe you could do sports this week.
Top Flight Time Machine is a sports podcast.
I mean, sorry, Sam. I know you are listening, but it's not. Okay, so this week.
Okay, well, this is bad.
Do whatever the hell you want, like you did last time. So anyway, thanks for listening.
Right. Thanks, Steve.
Cheers, Mark. Thank you.